In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Back on Downtown. Yes, it is time to talk movies.
Let's all go to the
lobby. On Pass the Popcorn, as we are joined by writer, film critic, and professional cat wrangler, Alan Adams. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good to be here.
How are things in your menagerie?
Pretty great. Although I will say, Sheridan was out of town this weekend. Her flight doesn't get in until late tonight, so she's still out there. And so I was left with sole supervisory privileges over the course of the weekend.
Ooh.
Yeah. It went okay. I haven't been by the house since I got off work. If they made it that long, I'm sure they made it through a Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Without too much of a problem. They're very sweet. It's one of those things where, you know, you've got four kittens and they have literally two settings, sleeping or chaotic whirlwind. Like there's no middle ground. And the truth is, you never know what you're going to get when you open the door. So
yikes.
So you just open it, you keep your feet ready because they're ready to bolt.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. They want to get out. And as our ongoing house saga, there are a lot of places for them to go if they get out.
Mm.
So it's one of those things where it's just like, I really gotta, you gotta play strong D.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like,
knees bent slightly, weight on the balls of your feet.
Yep.
Squared up.
Yeah, you gotta put and make sure those hands are touching the ground, man, because they will scoot under there so fast.
You gotta be able to scoop.
Yep. happily, on the rare occasion that they do get loose, they don't tend to go far because they're very fascinated by their surroundings. bless her heart, Stella seems to she handles it like a champ. Like she's clearly not super stoked to have these little interlopers in her house, but every time she sees one, she's very sweet. And
because she's thinking, well, this is better than the dogs they often.
Well, that's the thing. I think she's if I gotta pick one, I think this is probably what I want.
Right, go with a lesser species.
Yep.
sorry, cat lovers.
That was the majority of my weekend. You would think it's like, oh yeah, you know, the wife's out of town, you know, live that bachelor life. Rich, I didn't leave the house.
Yeah, those are the old days. It's a brave new world now, my friend.
Oh my god! I went outside long enough to snowblow the driveway on Saturday morning. Saturday morning, Sunday morning. No, I guess whenever it was.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. Like it was just like, yep, I'm going to sit on my couch. I'm going to do laundry. I'm going to play with the critters. I'm going to eat sandwiches. And yes, that is the exciting life that I lead now.
There you go. Well, somewhere in all that, though, you got a chance to see Creed 3.
I did. I went and saw it Friday night. And, like I learned a lot of things going to that movie. The first lesson I got was before it even started. And that is, I'm reminded why going to the movies on Friday nights is terrible. I learned that there may be no more off-putting smell in the world than the combination of movie theater popcorn and Axe body spray.
Oh, so there were some young men in the theater.
Yes, the teenage boy contingent was rolling pretty hard on Friday night when I went to see Creed 3. Not entirely surprised. There appeared to be some dates. The group date was a thing when I was in high school, but I mean I feel like it's ventured even farther down that road. So it's just like, I don't know, there was just this amorphous blob of like teenage hormones two rows behind me.
Yeah.
Just smelling terrible. I will say, you know, in their defense, like it was like before the movie started, like there was a lot of talk, a lot of chatter, a little rowdy. I'm like, oh great, here we go. I gotta say, once things got started, everybody calmed down.
Oh good.
Everybody was respectful. It's just I don't know. Sometimes you go to the movie theater and you just want to turn around and be like, we are not in your living room. Yeah, and that's it's just so infuriating. And it's like, I mean, I'm no prude, but like, we live in a society, people. Like, let's
right. There's a social contract.
That's when you go to when you're, you know, it's like we all paid the same amount of money to be here. Mm-hmm. So let's maybe dial it back so we can watch the movie. But as I said, that was not an issue, despite my early misgivings. So, you know, don't judge a book by its odor, I guess. anyway, the movie itself, Creed III, was actually really pretty good. I'm not super surprised. Like they've really handled that sort of story pretty deftly going forward. Although I will say, this is star Michael B. Jordan also directed this film, and turns out he's not bad at that either. Like he's this is a very this film has a very good look, very distinct flow, compelling story. The performances are very strong, like just across the board for. Like, especially for a movie with a 3 in the title, like, this is pretty good work.
Hmm, good.
The basic gist is our hero, Adonis Creed, that's Michael B. Jordan, has retired from the world of boxing. He's devoted himself to his family, his wife, played by Tessa Thompson, and their young daughter, and basically just, you know, living the life of a retired boxer. Who still has all his faculties, and everyone's very happy about that. But we also see some flashbacks to his younger days, where we meet his young friend Damien. They share a history, not entirely pleasant history, and we soon learn that Damien had long ago went to prison. In the present day, he has come out. And he wants to get back into the ring. He was a very talented amateur boxer in his youth. The grown Damien, going by Dame, played by Jonathan Majors, who's just fantastic in this movie. And and it turns out Dame wants a shot. Adonis wants to help his old friend for reasons that become clearer and clearer as the movie plays out. And then things get complicated in. Well, in a way they tend to do in these sort of Rocky movies, but that's okay. Dame's rise is rapid, but there are extenuating circumstances. And well, is Creed going to get back in the ring? I mean, I'm not going to tell you, but you could probably figure it out. It's really strong. Like it's one of those things where. It has to be a deliberate choice to sort of make these parallels. These Creed movies are essentially lining up with the Rocky movies at this point. You've got your underdog story. You've got your takes on the champion. Although one could argue that Creed 2 is basically a combination of Rocky 2 and Rocky 4 because, you know, again, the big bad was Ivan Drago's kid in Creed 2. Here's the thing. In Creed 3, we get our Clubber Lang, and that's Jonathan Majors.
Ooh, nice.
And he's so good, man. Like, it's such a, you know, and it's, you know, whereas, you know, in Rocky 3, Mr. T was such a, just basically rendered as this sort of malevolent force of nature kind of character. Whereas here, we've got a little bit more backstory, more personal connection, but we still get a little bit of that. We still get a bit of that malevolence, but it's coming from a much more nuanced place, I think, which complicates the situation and complicates our feelings towards the dynamic in a very positive way, I think. But yeah, performances are excellent. Michael B. Jordan is so great in this role. Jonathan Majors is having a moment. Like he is, he's basically second on the call sheet on two of the biggest movies of the year so far, and you know we're just at the beginning of March. He's great. Tessa Thompson, as always, is great. Felicia Rashad is back as Adonis's mom. She's wonderful, and just down and down, you know, down the list, and everybody's great. I mentioned the aesthetics, like it's got a wonderful visual style to it, And, you know, he made some really bold choices with regard to our climactic bout that I don't know that they necessarily all work, but I appreciate that he's taking a swing, you know, like he's like Jordan tried to do something with this. And that's not something that often happens, particularly in boxing movies. Like they tend to be pretty straightforward traditionally. And so for him to try to push beyond that just a little bit was interesting to see. Like I said, I don't know that all the choices necessarily fully work, but the fact that he made them, I think, is a really good thing. And it will be interesting to see what happens if they continue going forward with this franchise. I can't imagine they won't. You know, it's number one at the box office. Like they're very successful films. And the truth is, like, this one's pretty good. Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's not like we're not in a full-on, like, downward spiral of diminishing returns at this point. So why not go back if everybody involved is interested?
Right.
Like, you know, because the truth is, like, seeing Jordan up there and Jonathan Majors with their, you know, with their Marvel bodies, it's just like, yeah, you can't do that forever, guys. So if you're going to do it, you gotta roll out now. Conspicuous in his absence is Sylvester Stallone. I'm not entirely sure why. Other than just in terms of the plot and the narrative, having Rocky there could conceivably complicate things a little bit, but yeah. Otherwise, I'm, who knows? Maybe just wanted to cash checks this time. All right. But yeah, like I said, Creed 3. If you liked the first two, for sure, check this one out because it is a very strong continuation in the series.
Excellent, excellent. Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. Of course, the Academy Awards coming up on Sunday night, an interesting year. And if the earlier awards, the I don't know how many there have been so far, but if they're any indication, it might be a pretty good night for I always get the title wrong. Everything,
Everywhere,
all at once. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of my take. Like, it's basically every award show that serves as a traditional sort of like predictor or precursor to the Oscars. Man, Everything Everywhere All at Once is just winning Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, it's just like it's taking home all of these trophies, and there's little reason for me to think that they won't, that trend's not going to continue. You know, I think it topped out with 11 nominations. It can't win that many because it's double nominated.
Right.
I won't be surprised to see it take home half a dozen. Including Best Picture. I think it's a very good, very strong candidate for that. But I mean, I think they win for Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Directors Guild thought so, and again, talked about predictors. You know, it's tough. Like, it's tough to say that when, you know, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, Martin McDonagh is in that category. You know, Ruben Ugland, who people are really looking to reward, and you know, Todd Field for Tar. And of course, you know, this guy, you know, Steven Spielberg, you may have heard
right,
of him.
Right.
But I think, I mean, it really does seem like the momentum is with Daniels.
Let's, you want to talk about some of the acting nominations?
I do.
Let's say, what do you want to start with? A supporting actor, actress?
Yeah, let's do the supporting categories first. As per usual, the supporting performance categories, it seems like it breaks down like this just about every year, or maybe that's just like recency bias or whatever, but it feels like every year there's one like stone cold, no doubt lock in one of the categories. And then it's just an absolute free for all in the other. And that's what we have this year. I think best supporting actor, K-Way Kwan. No one else has won this award like in any of these things. Like, he's just run the table, and the idea that kind of run is going to just suddenly stop at the Oscars is ludicrous to me. It's particularly when you take into account the Academy's love of a good story, and he's a great story.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Someone, you know, child actor who was in some wildly successful movies in the 1980s and then couldn't get work because, you know, he's an Asian guy.
Yeah.
You know, basically left the business and then almost on a whim climbs back in. This is his first major role, and everyone's like, oh right, this guy was great.
Yeah.
And
and he's great in this movie too.
Oh, he's phenomenal. It's such a wonderful performance.
But there are some other, and I have not seen Causeway, but I've seen the other nominees, and you know, the two guys from Banshees of Inisherin are fantastic, and Judd Hirsch is terrific in The Fablemans.
See, and it's so funny because we sort of, and it's such a weird comparison to make, but we alluded to this the other day when we were talking about Jennifer Coolidge. You know, Judd Hirsch, it's weird to compare Jennifer Coolidge and Judd Hirsch, but like fundamentally it's like, oh, you want someone to come in and just absolutely annihilate like three scenes? Yeah. Here, let Mr. Hirsch is on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, just a phenomenal performance. I think Gleason and Barry Keoghan probably split votes for Banshees of Inisherin, which is, it's funny because that's a movie where it's like, honestly, like, maybe a little bit of category fraud. Like, I would argue that Gleason probably belongs in the lead actor category.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is just how the game's played.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, they might, you know, he and Barry Keoghan might split votes, but, you know, he and Colin Farrell would definitely split votes.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, so those, the both of them are excellent. Yeah, like Causeway, it was like an Apple TV Plus, like straight to streamer movie. I believe Jennifer Lawrence was the female lead in that. And he was like a therapist helping her deal with like PTSD. You know, like, again, like one of those performances, like I feel like everyone in Hollywood really likes Brian Tyree Henry. And so it's like, here you go, bud. But it's, I mean, the notion of anyone other than Kwan winning is just seems a little far-fetched at this point.
Supporting actress, then, wide open, a couple of the actors from Everything Everywhere All at Once, who were both phenomenal. Hong Chau, now, was Hong Chau also in The Menu?
Yes.
And was fantastic
awesome.
In that.
Awesome in that movie.
And I have not seen Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Angela Bassett's always great. But Carrie Condon, holy cow.
Yeah.
And that would get my vote. I know that.
I think that, like, and that's kind of where I landed, largely because it seems, I don't know how the Academy gets out of here without rewarding at least one acting performance from that movie, because The Banshees of Inisherin is just a phenomenal film, and it's a phenomenal actor's showcase.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is the spot where they have the best shot. You mentioned Jamie Lee Curtis and Stephanie Hsu from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Both phenomenal. Again, I think we might be talking about a little bit of a vote split. Although,
you sometimes get that career achievement award effect, though.
Yeah, well, and it's so tough this time around because, and again, that's why I mentioned this being sort of wide open. You know, Angela Bassett doesn't have one either.
No.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, and I suppose it boils down to, is her first Oscar going to be for, you know, shouting at a green screen inside a gigantic warehouse in like suburban Atlanta?
Right,
like,
right.
Is that really what we're going to do? Mm. And I struggle to see it. Like, I understand the sentiment, and, you know, Angela Bassett, you know, I mean, she deserved one of these 20 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, such is life. Like, that's just the way it goes. Jamie Lee Curtis is the same way. As far as, like, if it's going to be a Lifetime Achievement Award, like, I would almost rather see it go to Jamie Lee Curtis, because, like, I mean, Angela Bassett is great in Black Panther 2. Wonderful. Jamie Lee Curtis has been a whole vibe this entire awards season, and it's just like the joy that she derives from what she does, it's always kind of been present, but like I feel like we've really seen it over the course of the last few months, both in terms of her own sort of recognition and her celebration of the recognition of her co-stars. And so it would be really great to see that happen. All of which comes down to the fact I went with Carrie Condon as well. Like, I mean, I think she's just so phenomenal in the film. And like I said, it seems unlikely that they're not going to recognize this film in some respect, as far as performances are concerned.
All right, best actress. Do we see the Everything Everywhere All at Once train keep rolling on, or does Andrea Riseborough continue this remarkable upset story.
I'll be real. I, along with 99.99% of the population, have not seen To Leslie. Mm-hmm. And like the whiff, like controversy is the wrong word. It's like she just did what everybody does. It was being done on her behalf in a way, you know, for a movie that literally no one saw.
Right.
You know, so it's tough. You know, there are a couple in there that that, you know, they make sense, but I don't see them having any real shot. You know, Michelle Williams, always wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, warrants all the accolades that she gets. Ana de Armas for Blonde is a weird one. Because, again, it is, in a vacuum, I think, a really interesting performance. Unfortunately, that performance takes place in a really terrible movie.
Yeah.
Like, just a real bad one that just ill-conceived from top to bottom. And so I'm not entirely sure I agree with her being here. That being said, I don't know who I replace her with. Mm. So, you know, c'est la vie, I guess. And then, you know, we get into the sort of... I think Cate Blanchett's got a real shot. Like, this movie is really... Tar is really generating a lot of conversation out there. And it is the sort of, like, actorly part, I think, that sometimes the Academy likes to reward in categories like this. But, man, it's just... It's so hard to look past the momentum that Michelle Yeoh has built, you know, throughout this entire award season. And, again, like... Deservedly so. Like, she's so good in this movie, and good in a way that, you know, it's like, you know, it's like they ask actors to come into an audition with like two contrasting monologues. Show us what you can do. And I mean, and that's basically what she does in this movie. Like, right. like every single tool in her kit, like, you know, comedy, drama, action, like it all gets pulled out and used like just. You know, and she's someone who is just operating at the absolute peak of her abilities. You know, she gets the laughs when she needs to get the laughs. She gets the tears when she gets the tears. She kicks ass when she needs to kick ass. It's just a tour de force. Like, it really is. And I will be genuinely shocked if they give it to anyone other than Michelle Yeoh.
All right, best actor. Now, I have not seen After Sun, and I haven't seen Living, but I've heard great things about it. But I kind of feel like both Bill Nye and Colin Farrell will get overwhelmed by a couple of pretty showy performances from Austin Butler as Elvis and Brendan Fraser in The Whale.
I mean, I think that's you're hitting the nail on the head there. Because again, you know, not a ton of people have seen After Sun, although the notices have been phenomenal. You know, and it's always interesting when these sorts of lesser known names kind of bubble up in these kinds of situations. So that's really cool. Like, he's not going to win, you know. And so same with Bill Nighy. Like, he it's funny. I was listening to a friend of downtown, David Roth, on the Defector podcast, The Distraction, and they were talking movies, and someone made the joke about how. They weren't entirely convinced that Living was a real movie. And it was just one of those things where they had a spot to fill, so they just made something up and put, you know, Bill Nye's name on it. And they're like, sure, we'll nominate him for an Oscar. But yeah, and again, Colin Farrell, phenomenal. Like, it's like he's one of those guys that I've definitely come around on. Mm. Like,
me too.
Like, when, like, in his earlier days, like, there was an attitude there that I found off-putting. But you know, we all grow up, you know, and he has really grown into his talents in a way that has really shown him to be one of the more gifted actors of his generation. And I think we always knew the talent was there. Mm. I don't know that we ever really expected him to put it all together as fully as he has. Mm. So that's great. He's wonderful in that movie. Again, if you haven't seen The Banshees of Inisherin, you really should. It's, you know... Granted, there's not a lot of, you know, there's no CGI and not a lot. There's a couple of distant explosions, but nothing really up close and personal. But yeah, it's just a wonderful piece of cinema. And then we get to the big two. You know, Austin Butler's been making a push. Like, he's getting a lot of attention. And the truth is, these sorts of, like, the Academy loves people playing musicians.
Yeah.
They really do.
And he's great in it.
Yeah, and he plays the hell out of Elvis.
Yeah.
Like, he really is, you know, and, you know, he benefits from the Baz Luhrmanning of it all. And so it's just like, it's all so big and bold and bright, and he gets to really just go for it.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's one thing to watch an actor sort of, like, you know, overly emote and chew on the scenery and whatever. It's another when it's clear from the first moment that that is precisely what this actor has been directed to do.
Yes.
You know, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, it's a Baz Luhrmann movie. Like,
chew away.
Yeah. Seriously. Just put on your napkin, like, get your knife and fork and dig in, because we're just going to do this for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's going to be bright and bold, and you are going to be the biggest and brightest thing on the screen.
If you feel like you're doing too much, do more.
Yep. but then on the other hand, you've got Brendan Fraser in The Whale. The Academy also really enjoys recognizing these sorts of transformative performances.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, like, he had the benefit of prosthetics, makeup, etc., for The Whale. And he is another sort of comeback story.
Yep.
In a pretty real way, you know, and somebody who left the spotlight not entirely through his own doing, like, you know, circumstances kind of pushed him,
right?
You know, and so for him to be able to sort of make his way back and to do so, you know, in a piece that has, you know, proven controversial, but like a very well received stage play. You know, it's, you know, one of those films where you have this sort of auteurist sort of taking a piece and really dropping an actor into it. Darren Aronofsky directed The Whale, and so it's this really showcasey type part that I think, I mean, I think the intent was always for this kind of attention. I don't know that that's necessarily why Fraser took the part, but like, I think that's why this movie exists, is for this kind of attention. And and he's great. Like, he's just a phenomenal performer, and it's so wonderful to see him, you know, back at it after having, I mean, largely been just gone for a decade or more, just like vanishing, and like that just doesn't happen anymore. And so for it to happen and for him to find his way back is really quite impressive. So yeah, ultimately there are a couple of names on here that wouldn't surprise me, but I think at the end of the day, I think it's going to be Brendan Fraser.
All right, best picture. How many films actually have a shot out of the, what is it, 10 nominees?
Three or four, maybe. You know, there are a couple on there. Like, you have your sort of populist like choices, like, you know, your, you know, Top Gun Maverick's not going to win Best Picture. You know, Avatar: The Way of Water is not going to win Best Picture. But you know, but their presence here is a reminder of why they expanded the Best Picture slate in the first place.
Right.
This is an effort to draw in, you know, viewers who might otherwise not have tuned in. And I get it. And the truth is that I think both of these movies are going to win one or two trophies, like, you know, below the fold as far as down ballot stuff is concerned, just because they're both very impressive technical achievements. But yeah, they're not going to win Best Picture. You know, a couple of other ones. You got a couple of sort of foreign or foreign adjacent movies with Triangle of Sadness and All Quiet on the Western Front, which, have you seen All Quiet on the Western Front?
I haven't, but I need to. The trailer and some of the interviews I've seen made it look really good.
Like, I've heard nothing but great things, but it's just like, I don't know if I'm here for, you know, World War I trench warfare.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I gotta be in the right, place.
Right.
You know?
I'm not sure I've recovered from watching 1917.
Right. You know, and it's like 3 hours, and it's one of those things where I'm just going to need to be in a very specific place before I see that movie. But that being said, also foreign language, You know, yes, that seal has been broken. I don't think they're going to break it again for All Quiet on the Western Front. And then, you know, you've got some more traditional Oscar fare stuff, like we mentioned Banshees of Inisherin. You know, Tar is very much an Oscar movie. Women Talking, which, like, I'm familiar with the book, but I haven't, like, I don't even know where that movie was. Like, it, I believe it was a theatrical release, but okay. I never saw it. Like, it didn't pop up on any of the streamers that I noticed. Mm. I'm sure it will. But yes, based on a very good book by Miriam Toews. But again, like, the sort of movie that gets nominated but isn't necessarily going to win. You know, and then we get into stuff like, you know, Spielberg's, you know, autobiographical film. Like, it's, you know, when you put that guy out there, when he's putting himself out there with the Fabelmans, like, that has to be considered a contender. Although it does seem to have faded a little bit, yeah, in the race. You know, Elvis is on here. You know, it's one of those things where ordinarily I would not necessarily pick it as something that would have a shot, but, you know, the last few years have shown me that you know, these kinds of movies can get some traction. And will this be, you know, like, with the, you know, the sort of ranked choice voting, like, is Elvis going to be like everybody's third favorite movie, and then all of a sudden, you know, come the night, it's you know, it's taking home the trophy? It's probably not, because the general consensus seems to be that pretty much everybody kind of dug Everything Everywhere All at Once. You know, just the combination of the people involved on screen, the people involved off screen, you know, the idea of it being something that's just a little bit different.
Well, and the title says it all, because if somebody asked you to, what kind of movie is Everything Everywhere All at Once? It's the title.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah, it depends on where you are in the runtime.
Yeah,
you know. But I will say, and one of the things about it that has sort of fascinated me, and I don't know that there's been I'm sure there's been conversation about it, but I haven't really seen anything. Like, I almost want to say this movie came out, like, it might have come out before last year's ceremony aired.
Wow.
Like, it came out early in the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a movie to come out that early and still maintain this kind of, you know, buzz, indicates to me that unless something wildly unforeseen happens, I think it's going to do very well, yeah, come Sunday.
Yeah, I think you're right. Alan Adams talking Oscars with us here on Downtown. Thank you, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
Enjoy the ceremony Sunday, and good luck with the cats.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.